You're listening to an encore edition of Studio Tulsa recorded earlier this year. Welcome to Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. According to my guest today, there are two things that Americans consume too much. The first is calories, and the second is information. Now, for the typical NPR junkie, the latter sounds pretty implausible. But Clay Johnson says, like any diet, too much of anything is not good. And like good calories and bad calories, there are sources of good information and bad information. The bad information in his mind? The information of affirmation, new sources that confirm our preconceived notions and prejudices, independent of facts or reality. Fox News, The Daily Kos, MSNBC, or Red State, all are dedicated to affirming conservatives and liberals' worldview. Clay Johnson is the founder of Blue State Digital. That was the online component that helped propel President Obama to victory in 2008. He is since the former director of Sunlight Labs, where he led a team of net developers and designers in building internet tools to give people more access to raw government data on the internet. He's now the author of The Information Diet, A Case for Conscious Consumption. He joins us today on Studio Tulsa. Clay Johnson, welcome to Studio Tulsa. Thanks very much for joining us.
It's great to be here.
This book, The Information Diet, sort of has its origins with a sign that you saw during the healthcare debate when you were working at Sunlight Labs, and it said, "Keep your government hands off my Medicare." And that sort of becomes the basis of this whole book, you know, how such ideas get started.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I saw that sign, "Keep your government hands off my Medicare," and then in that same time period, I was running around the Walter Reed Army Hospital and saw a woman holding a sign up above her head that said, "Enlist here to die for Halliburton," which also doesn't make a lot of sense. It would be very poor marketing to run an Army recruitment center inside of an Army hospital. And, you know, those two signs of the same day made me go, you know, something's wrong with the dialogue that we're having, and I think it has to do with the media that we're consuming.
This book looks like sort of the little thing that you find on food, the nutrition information, the information diet, and you keep coming back to food for this idea of information over consumption.
That's right. I mean, we thought about this in this idea of information overload. We sort of tried that tack, and it really doesn't work. And the reason why I think it doesn't work is because you can't blame information for anything. It's not the information's fault. It's like in the world of food, it's like blaming the fried chicken for making you fat. To my knowledge, fried chicken has never reanimated itself and flown into anybody's mouth. And I think the same thing is happening with information. We can't really blame information for anything. So I think the problem is information over consumption. And I think it's really, you know, more specifically malnutrition. It's about consuming. I think we're consuming too much bad stuff and not enough good stuff. And I don't mean to say bad and good in terms of right and wrong. I mean bad and good in terms of quality. The quality of the information that we're taking in isn't particularly good because it serves most of what's coming out of media these days seems to serve a single purpose, and that's to affirm us rather than to inform us. And so that begs the question, who wants to hear the truth when they can hear that they're right?
And you actually write in the book, you said, you know, Fox News for progressives is, you know, the most villainous force in the universe. And probably for conservatives, MSNBC or NPR tends to be that way. But in Fox, you say it's less about promoting the conservative agenda and more about the money.
Yeah, sure. I mean, look, if Fox could figure out how to deliver the bliss of affirmation to liberals at the same time that they deliver the bliss of affirmation to conservatives, if they could tell both sides that they were right, they'd make twice as much money. So of course they'd do that. The problem is you can't do that. So, you know, you have Fox on the right providing conservatives with all the affirmative news that they need, and then you have MSNBC and now Current on the left really competing with one another on cable to figure out if they can do the same for the left. And what Fox figured out, what Roger Ailes, the chairman of Fox, figured out is that selling opinion and selling personality is more profitable than selling a newsroom. Much more profitable. Fox is the most profitable news network on television, and the rest of news is following suit. I want to just disclaim that this isn't a moral judgment. This is a business judgment. I don't believe that Fox is evil. I believe that Fox has a fiduciary responsibility to its shareholders to maximize the amount of wealth of the people who own that corporation. And what that means is that if you're Roger Ailes, that means you have a responsibility to manufacture the cheapest news that gets the most viewers.
And in fact, it's not necessarily about promoting the conservative agenda. It's a business strategy.
Right.
In fact, you write that what Fox News has really done is they've lowered the overhead of maintaining a journalism operation by, I think, what was it? Fox is about a quarter the size of the newsroom of what CNN was when Fox really became popular.
Right.
In fact, those other entities have downsized their newsrooms and gone to personality-driven programs, which is what Fox did, pretty much.
Right. I mean, the other studios are emulating Fox, just like maybe the first person who figured out that, you know, hamburgers really sold well in fast food, you had a bunch of other companies start emulating them. The same thing's happening here. And if you could, you know, if broccoli tasted good, then, you know, we'd have broccoli burgers at McDonald's. But it's not cheap, and it doesn't taste nearly as good as a hamburger.
And when you talk about information overconsumption, it's really not the broadcast stations or cable stations that we're talking about. It may be a little bit of the cable stations, but really where it is the Internet.
Well, I think the Internet is where it gets a little bit more sophisticated. But I think it happens everywhere. This isn't a new problem. We've had yellow journalism going on since the beginning of this century. Ask John Adams about what happened when he tried to you know, ban his version of Fox News. that put his political party out of business. The same thing is happening now. And, the Internet just makes it more frictionless. So on the Internet, every click and every search is a vote. And this is why my book is subtitled The Case for Conscious Consumption. It's because when you click on things or search for things, it has an ethical consequence for somebody else. So if you're searching for Snooki on Google, you're indicating to news editors around the world that you would like more content written about Snooki. If you're clicking on a Kim Kardashian post on the Huffington Post, you're indicating to news editors that you would like more articles written about Kim Kardashian. And so what that means is that your news consumption is affecting my news consumption.
And in fact, you write about link bait, and you sort of give several examples from Fox News and from the Huffington Post, from the other side of the political spectrum, in which they'll tweak headlines and make it irresistible if this coincides with your worldview that you're going to have to click on this.
Yeah, my favorite one is one by Fox, and it was, I think the original headline, I don't have the book in front of me, so I might not quote this exactly, but the original headline was, you know, Obama down in the polls amongst middle-aged women in Iowa, and Fox changed it to Obama has problem with white women. And it's just like, okay, Fox, you know, I guess, and, you know, who's not going to click on that?
And in fact, one of the things you also write about is the economics of the new journalism, which is really web-based, in which you're picking up a story, rewriting it, and maybe in the course of a half, 45 minutes, you're paid a very minuscule amount of money compared to the amount of money that went into the original reporting of the story.
Right, having it regurgitated to you.
Exactly, and in many of these sophisticated websites, that freelance contracting person who's rewriting and sort of rerouting the story is seeing like a dollar and cents return based on the click-throughs.
That's right. You know, every morning an editor for any AOL property is basically waking up and looking to see what people are searching for and then writing explicitly to that so that, you know, that gets picked up more in Google. And then what they have in front of them is a screen to see precisely how much revenue that particular article is written in. So every piece of content has to turn a profit.
Wow. And it's like down to
I'll
the
I'll point out no one was searching for the Pentagon Papers, right? You know?
Right. And it's a really a dollars and cents of, I mean, right down to the cents, how much return
right.
on this particular story we've received.
It's really dangerous that no one was searching for the Pentagon Papers. And it's not because, Google didn't exist, but even if Google did exist, you know, no one would be searching for the Pentagon Papers because it wouldn't be known to exist. And so if all of our editors are focused explicitly on writing articles of what people are searching for, then how are we going to get the real news out there?
This has to be very devastating for someone like yourself, where, you know, you were at the time when this book sort of started, you were building internet tools to give people more access to government data so they could actually look at the data to really make informed decisions. And all of this new media strategy is about obfuscating a lot of that.
I think so, sort of. The thing is, you know, this transparency stuff is good and it's valuable. The work that I did at the Sunlight Foundation directing Sunlight Labs was good and valuable, but it's only half of the problem. You can't convince people to go on a diet by handing them a nutritional label. That strategy doesn't work. I doubt that anyone has, you know, not knowing what a nutritional label is, looked at the side of a Hungry Man dinner, read that it has, you know, 200% of the sodium, you know, that you need in order to survive, and said, man, I should go on a diet. That never happens. Instead, what the nutritional label does is it empowers the already healthy eater to make good decisions. And I think that's what government transparency does. It helps the already healthy information consumer make better decisions. And what we need to realize is that we have to start consuming information as deliberately as we consume food.
My guest today is Clay Johnson. He's the founder of Blue State Digital, a former director of Sunlight Labs, where he led a team of net developers and designers in building internet tools to give people more access to government data. And he's the author of The Information Diet, A Case for Conscious Consumption. And he makes all these parallels to, you know, our obesity epidemic and how we consume way too much food, and it's making parallels to how we consume information. And you're going back to that gentleman who I think you talked to, didn't you?
I stopped and talked to him.
The keep your government hands off.
It was a great conversation.
Because he was not an idiot. He was informed and very intelligent. But he had this, you know, I mean, I'm just going to say, when you see someone holding a sign, keep your government hands off my Medicare, that's your first reaction.
yeah, it's like, this person must be a buffoon. But he was college educated. I mean, I didn't ask him for his degree or anything like that, or, I mean, that would be rude, but he told me he was college educated, and he, you know, he knew a lot about politics. He told me about the Federal Reserve Bank and how the Federal Reserve Bank started out on Jekyll Island, Georgia, and all kinds of things. So this guy was not misinformed. Or this guy was not underinformed, rather, but this guy was misinformed. And it's because I believe his news diet was such that he was only consuming information that he believed in, that told him that he was right. And this is the fundamental problem. No matter what crazy thought that's in your head, there is a minor media outlet out there willing to tell you that you're right, so that they can sell you advertisements.
Now, Clay, you, in fact, have experienced this yourself. You worked on the Howard Dean campaign, and you write in the book about how You fell prey to this yourself.
Sure. I mean, when people ask me, what does a poor information diet do to you? I say it can really destroy relationships and destroy families. When I was on the Dean campaign in 2004, you know, I was consuming all Dean all the time. In the morning, we'd read news clips about how great Howard Dean was. In the afternoon, we'd write blog posts about how great Howard Dean is, and then in the evening we'd watch The West Wing, which was our fantasy of what Howard Dean would be like once elected president. And then I went home for Thanksgiving in 2003, a couple of weeks before the Iowa caucuses. And, you know, my Uncle Warren was there, and Uncle Warren was a rabid Republican, a Fox News viewer. He watched Fox News, and when he wasn't watching Fox News, he was listening to Rush Limbaugh. And, you know, that Thanksgiving didn't end well. and it's because it ended in a screaming match, and Uncle Warren storming out of the house, and me saying, I'm never going to talk to you again. And it was not because we don't love each other. I love my Uncle Warren. He's I don't want to get my other relatives mad at me, but I'm sorry, he's my favorite relative of all time, besides my parents, my wife, and my soon-to-be child. It was our news diets that was really tearing that apart. And had my Uncle Warren or I really been a little less rabid and a little bit more moderate in our information consumption, maybe a little more diverse in our information consumption, we would have had a much stronger relationship.
Then the bubble really burst when you went back to Iowa in the days before the caucus and you talked to the polling director and said, how much are we going to win by?
Yeah, I said, how much are we going to win by? He said, Kerry's going to win by 10. I thought he was the biggest dummy on the planet, but he was the only one who had the data. And, we kept on that campaign up until Wisconsin for months. The Dean lost Iowa in the first week of January, but we kept thinking that he was going to win until March.
Yeah. And was it a result of the fact that all of your media consumption was sort of in the DENIAC world, if you will?
Sure, especially on the internet side, because remember, everybody on the internet at the time was saying that we were the chosen ones, we were the internet, bearing its natural born right to take over media and all this stuff, and so we thought when people tell you you're destined to win, it's pretty hard to hear that you're not gonna.
Now, one of the things your book does, you actually look at the idea of information overload or information overconsumption. And scientists are studying this, and what are they finding?
Well, the first thing that's interesting is that there's this idea of neuroplasticity. Now, it used to be the case that we thought that the brain stopped developing around 25 years old, but that's just not the case. Our brain consistently changes, and whenever we learn something new, it results in a physiological change in our brains. One interesting study was done on London cab drivers who don't get to use GPSs. They have to know pretty much where everything is in the city of London. They found that they had enlarged hippocampuses or hippocampi. I don't know what the plural of that is yet. I carefully worded my way out of pluralizing hippocampus in the book. And the hippocampus is a part of the brain that controls your spatial navigation. And I thought that was really interesting. And another study was done that said that, people on the left have enlarged parts of their brains versus other people on the right have different parts of the brain that are enlarged. And these things, I wonder if they're a result of our media consumption, not a result of genes or something like that. That the differences between us are actually a result of our media consumption. And if that's the case, doesn't that mean that the more you're affirmed, the more difficult it is for you to change your mind on a structural level, on a biological level?
And of course, one of the other chapters sort of deals with the symptoms of overload, and you make sort of a caricature case, but it talks about how, when we're in this sort of feeling of having to have information constantly, it's people walking down the street looking at their iPhone, as they're walking into the street without knowing where they're going, constantly hooked in, turned on, and viewing something. And this has got to be changing us.
First off, I think it's making us fat. I think
you make a causal relationship between information overconsumption and dietary overconsumption, because we're just not getting any exercise. We're sitting in front of the screen.
I don't know of many people whose primary method of information consumption is on a treadmill. When we're consuming, we're not really exercising. That's the first problem. But the problems, are also short attention spans. Our ability to focus is diminished, and to multitask is actually diminished. Some great research has been out there that says that, the more multitasking you do, the worse you get at it. It weakens social relationships, both with your family and with your friends. And I think it if you're not careful, it also sort of takes you out of your local community. It takes your eyes off of your neighborhood, and you get too distracted by, the affairs of the world, when in fact the stuff that's happening on your block is probably more actionable and relevant to you.
You quote a UC San Diego study in 2008, we're consuming almost 12 hours of information a day, per person, when we're not at work.
That's right.
I mean, literally, that's we're consuming information at every moment when we're not at work.
And doing that
while we're at work, probably.
Yeah, for a lot of knowledge workers, that's definitely the case. And so you have to think, maybe maybe you want to call your mother, you know, maybe you ought to go outside a little bit. But I mean, beyond that, it's, so if you are consuming a lot of information, is that information of use to you? And are you not producing anything at all? I mean, the one critical point of the information diet I want to get across is that the production of stuff is as useful as the consumption of stuff, and that producing information is critical to helping you think out what it is, helping you know what you think. So I write 1,000 words a day on my website, informationdiet.com, just to make sure that my head is clear and to get out what it is that I'm thinking about, because that helps me know what it is that I know.
You actually have your own information diet we'll talk about in just a moment. Clay Johnson is my guest, the author of The Information Diet, A Case for Conscious Consumption. He's the founder of Blue State Digital, former director of Sunlight Labs. And your consumption diet, you know, it's interesting. It's you get raw information quite a bit, a little bit of affirmation. That means going to the sites that you agree with politically, quite a bit of local social, some entertainment. Mm-hmm. And so explain your diet, if you will.
So I try and I call it being an info vegan. So what that means is, first, it means being very deliberate about what it is that I'm taking in. Second is trying to get a depth of knowledge around a few particular things rather than presuming I have a broad level of knowledge about a lot of things. You know, the one thing I've learned in 10 years of working in Washington, D.C. is that the system is complicated, and it's complicated for very good reasons. And, you know, if you want to pay attention to national politics and you want to understand what's really happening in Washington, that means you have to really get to know the system and all the levers of power in Washington, D.C. If you don't, then you generally will be ineffective. Being an info vegan means staying close to the source of information. So that means getting to raw data, getting to, you know, learning how to look through a spreadsheet, sort of managing that. It means, you know, saying, okay, look, I'm going to watch the Daily Show tonight, but that means I probably shouldn't check out, you know, Daily Kos, because I might get too much news from the left. And I think it means staying local with your information. I mean, this is very important. Paying more attention to what's happening in your local community than the affairs of the world will give you a great dividends.
You know, it's so hard to get away from an opinion on the internet or slanting on the internet. Should maybe we just go back to watching network news?
I think the real thing is activism. I think the thing that we need to be asking journalists is to show their work. I can't stress that enough. Journalists need to be of service to their readers, watchers, and viewers. And what that means is, when they are not providing the source material of how they wrote their articles, they're not being of service. And the reason why they're not being of service is because they believe that what they write is more important than you making up your own mind. That, to me, is incredibly disrespectful. And almost all journalists do it. So I've probably just botched all coverage for the information diet. I think that's the case. And there are some websites out there now that are doing that are showing their work, and I think that's a much better way to operate as a journalist than by simply writing the news from some vague, ambiguous viewpoint, trying to represent both sides without describing how it is that you came to the conclusions that you got to.
So does that mean sourcing every sort of statistic, every sourcing all information with the exception of confidential sources, and you have to list that as confidential.
Yep, I think that's right.
Of course, you also write in the book about churnalism, which is, you know, where you see wholesale sort of press releases becoming news stories, and that's part of the sort of the idea of being a healthy consumer of information, is knowing when you're seeing that.
Right, journalism.com actually allows you to copy and paste a news story into a box on their website, and you can see how much of your of the news that you just read was copied and pasted by came directly from a press release. And I think looking at the economics of how the press works, the number of PR reps to PR consultants or PR flacks to journalists has doubled in the past 30 years. The PR business is exploding while the journalism business is dying. The established journalism business is dying. I think the future of news is actually brighter than the past of news. But the established press business is really stalling out. And that means that journalists don't have a lot of time. And so there's, you know, four people out there willing to tell every journalist what it is that they'd like for them to write about. And a lot of journalists just do that.
When we talk about a food consumption, a starvation diet never works.
That's
but,
right.
But do you think an information starvation diet from time to time is a beneficial thing?
I mean, look, if you're going on vacation to some beautiful place, you know, I'm going on vacation with my wife. She's 5 months pregnant, so we're having a baby moon this weekend, and I don't plan on checking in on the computer very much, but I wouldn't call that a diet. I'd call that, you know, spending my time wisely with my wife and enjoying some peace and quiet while we still have the luxury of having it. But I think when you sort of go on these fasts for the deliberate purpose of being on a fast, you just end up binging when you get back. What's really important here are habits and healthy choices, not some form of fast or social media vacation or something like that. Consume deliberately, know what you're consuming, and you'll be all right.
I tell you, it's very difficult to get away from this sort of idea of affirmation, though. Your beliefs and media outlets that coincide with those beliefs.
Sure. I mean, it's very difficult for you to sort of pop your own filter bubble. And a lot of people think that that means, you know, going to watch Fox News when you're a liberal and going to watch, you know, MSNBC when you're a conservative. And that doesn't make sense. That doesn't make it much sense. That's like saying, well, instead of eating only ice cream and being obese, I'm going to eat ice cream and fried chicken and be obese. Diversifying high-fat foods isn't going to make you any thinner. Instead, what you need to do is flip the consumption chain on its head. Stick to sources. You know, I say in the book, read not too much, mostly facts. And that's, I think, the thing here is to consume deliberately, to consume just enough. I always tell people to be on the lookout for yesterday's news, that today's news doesn't matter nearly as much as yesterday's. So if a story is still going on from yesterday, that means it's probably pretty important, but a story from today probably isn't.
Good thoughts. The name of the book is The Information Diet. Clay Johnson, thanks very much for joining us.
It's been great. Thank you.
Clay Johnson is the founder of Blue State Digital and the former director of Sunlight Labs. His new book is titled The Information Diet, A Case for Conscious Consumption. It's published by O'Reilly. Well, that's Studio Tulsa for today. Our program is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. The views of our guests and commentators are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of KWGS or its licensee, the University of Tulsa. If you missed one of our recent shows, they're available online at our website, publicradiotulsa.org. Just search for Studio Tulsa. And our podcast is available at the iTunes Store. It's free. Just search for Studio Tulsa. I'm Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.